Time to throw. Dumps over the middle. Caught. Morgan with a catch. 15, 10, 5. At the pylon. Did he score? He did. Celebrating in the East Stands. Taking a knee is Tanner Lee, and that will do it for this one. Nebraska is going to win it 28-6.
Didn't really let us get anything going running game-wise and passing game-wise. We're just not set up to, we're not a passing team. We'll get in passing situations as hard for us. I mean, kind of simple as that. And that's protection, accuracy, throwing the football, and of course, catching it.
We have to play better. Simple as that. You know, the thing was for us to play a lot harder than we played last time. Be more physical. Just kind of disappointed in our effort.
It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana. We'll get you caught up on your Illini sports news along with other area and national sports news. Here are Lauren Tate and Michael Kaiser.
Good Saturday morning, live from Iowa City. Thanks for joining us today. You can give us a call, 356-9397. Texas on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Listen live at WDWS.com. Also, email us your thoughts, Illini football, Illini basketball, Chicago Cubs, playoff baseball, anything you want at talk@WDWS.com. Of course, you can always find a podcast of this show at our website and on iTunes. Lauren Tate, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Well, it's a little windy here. Had some rain showers. It's not raining at the moment, but it's going to be a wet day here in Iowa City. It was yesterday, and it's going to maybe, have an impact on how this game is played.
Yeah, probably won't have much of an impact on the way Iowa plays.
That's true.
They're going to try to grind it, and they've got a really good running back named Wadley, who, by the way, might be the second best running back in the league. Maybe I'm exaggerating there. Obviously, Barkley is number one, but I saw Wadley play several times this year against Iowa State and against Penn State. He's really good. I mean, he can run the football.
Yeah, he can, but Iowa has struggled to run the football of late. Last week especially, I think they only had like 19 yards on the ground, and they just weren't able to get it going. And so that's the thing. They're trying to figure out how they can get that going, and I think that'll be key today if they can get it going.
Yeah, Michigan State at Michigan State really shut them down, and I don't know what happened because I didn't see that game. But I had seen them earlier, of course, against Iowa State and Penn State, in which they seemed to be pretty effective. But I don't know what happened. I mean, obviously the game plan just didn't work against Michigan State. And Michigan State still presents a physical football team. But there's a lot of things going on for Illinois today. DeLauro's probably not going to start, apparently. He's got a bad knee. So I don't have any idea who they're going to run in at that tackle spot. That would be maybe Fagan, who started last week. It could be Solomon, who played earlier and started the game. It could be I just don't know what they're going to do. Meganson hasn't played, didn't play last week for reasons that I don't know. So that offensive line is just a problem. It's been a problem since the beginning of football practice. It's still a problem. It keeps changing every week, and that has a great effect on what the quarterback's going to get done.
It absolutely does, and Jeff George starting today for the Illini, expected to start today, and with the weather conditions, you expect not be able to throw the ball that well. So then you think in Chase Crouch, we could run a little bit better than Jeff, but Jeff's not going to have a lot of time. Just from looking at the other games so far this season, he's not going to have a lot of time to get rid of the football, and he's going to have to get rid of it in a hurry if he wants to try to have any success passing the football today.
Well, what did you think about all the baseball results yesterday?
It was interesting games. Obviously, there were the two games last night that I saw a lot of with the Yankees and Indians. I should say I saw more of the Cubs than the Yankees and the Indians. But the Indians, that game, they were down 8-3, and then they had that interesting play where they got hit by a pitch call, but it really was a foul tip into the mitt. And that would have changed the outcome of that inning. And obviously a grand slam later made it 8-7. The Indians won that game 9-8. And that was just really a wild thing. The Indians continue to find ways to win games late, and then the Yankees just really blew a good chance to get a split there in Cleveland.
Yeah, and all the talk about Kershaw, he gives up four homers. The Dodgers win 9-5, but he wasn't as effective as you expect him to be. But Hendricks was just exactly what I thought he would be. The guy hadn't given up a run of the last three starts that I know of.
Yeah, he has just been fantastic for the Cubs, and Kyle Hendricks is just he won a pitcher's duel last night because Steven Strasburg pitched well for the most part through five innings and just really had, you know, gave a couple hits there, and that really did him in, and Hendricks and that Cubs bullpen just shut down that Nationals offense last night, and things are setting up nicely for the Cubs as they move forward here, because you don't know, you know, Max Scherzer, he's going to pitch, supposed to pitch in Game 3, but is he going to be healthy? That's the question.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see how he does there. And, you know, back to Kershaw for a moment. You mentioned the four home runs. They were all solo. He's the first pitcher to give up that many home runs and still win a postseason outing. And he got the win last night. They won, but his struggles are continuing in the postseason. It's his first playoff win at Dodger Stadium, which is really hard to believe after all the years that he's been pitching for the Dodgers. It's his first playoff win at Dodger Stadium. But it's the four solo home runs. It's got to be a concern for the Dodgers moving forward. Despite getting the win last night, they got to get him right if they're going to go advance deep into the postseason.
Yeah, there is a possibility, and I didn't see the pitches, so I don't know. But when you get a big lead like he had, the main thing is don't walk anybody. And he might have been throwing, you know, he might have been just throwing for control purposes to make sure that they got the ball over. And when you give up solo homers, those don't usually beat you, but four might beat you, but. You know, when you got a lead like that, the main thing is to throw strikes.
It definitely is. And the Yankees-Indians game, Joe Girardi, an interesting quote from him last night. He said he didn't challenge the call that resulted in the Cleveland batsman instead of strike three because his replay personnel didn't have enough time to see the correct shot, and he didn't want to ruin the rhythm of his pitcher. Don't you want to get the call right?
Did you even have a hand in watching it that that's what happened? I didn't.
No, I mean, we were actually driving at that point, so I saw a replay later.
This was an afterthought. This is not something anybody even suspected at the time. At the moment that it happened, the umpire said it hit his, you know, nicked off his finger, and I think the announcers thought that, and I know I didn't have any idea that it hit the bat instead of the finger.
It barely clips it. I mean,
I mean, the catcher caught it. It was a third strike.
Oh, yeah. It definitely was.
The foul tip strike's what it was. Strikeout. The inning's over.
The Indians and the Yankees, and the Yankees trail that series 2-0, and the Indians have really got a stranglehold on that, but they may lose Edwin Encarnacion, which is an important player for them. The Cubs and Nationals get back underway later on today to game two of their series. The Red Sox and Astros, where the Astros, Lauren, are dominating that series so far. Both games, the final has been 8-2 in favor of Houston, down in Houston. So the Red Sox got to figure out a way to try to turn that series around.
Yeah, that's Houston looks really good.
that's a good way to put it. They're pretty good. Well, let's hear from Joe Maddon on the last night's performance of Kyle Hendricks and just how he was able to really get deep into the game and still have the same velocity.
You saw the velocity on the board. I mean, for him to maintain those numbers for the entire game is really impressive. And with that, that's why the changeup becomes an even better pitch at that point.
Lauren, is he their best pitcher right now? And Arrieta was injured, the hamstring, and he's still pitched really well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he did great. Arrieta, when he was healthy in the second half.
He can't do any better than throw a two-hitter with seven innings. I mean, I don't even know why they took him out. I mean, I never know why they take him out. Every time I see him pitch, I wonder, why would you take him out? He doesn't even strain himself. he looks to me like he could pitch a doubleheader.
Does that guy even break a sweat out there?
Nope.
I don't think I've ever seen that guy sweat on the mound. He is just really relaxed, and he just looks, in terms of his demeanor, like Greg Maddux on the mound, just in how he just carries himself. Is that a good comparison? Not really.
Well, that's a comparison a lot of people are making, but I think he compares himself to himself. Yeah. I've never seen anybody ever pitch the way he does.
Yeah,
he looks like he goes to sleep between pitches.
He's definitely not John Lackey on the mound in terms of his demeanor.
I mean, and the thing I can't get over is how many fastballs he throws over that they don't swing at. I don't understand it. I mean, they're not that fast, they're fast, but not by current standards, where you have hundreds of guys that can throw 95 miles an hour all over baseball, including the minors. But he's just got great stuff. His changeup is murder. It can't be hit.
No, he's just having a tremendous run dating back to last season, of course. So, again, the rundown, if you're wondering what all the series are at, the Cubs 1-0 over the Nationals after that first game of that series. The Diamondbacks trail the Dodgers 1-0 in that series. The Astros lead their series 2-0 over the Red Sox, and the Indians once again lead the Yankees 2-0 in that series. So that series shifts to New York. Dodgers and Diamondbacks play again today. Nationals and Cubs also, as I mentioned, play again today. Well, some other quick notes. Get some Illini basketball news, recruiting news, Lauren, and it came out yesterday morning, but just probably about an hour ago, 24 hours ago or so. Landers Nolly cut his list to 2. Illinois not on it. He's visiting Georgia this weekend. It's between Georgia and Virginia Tech, and Illinois missed on 4 different recruits this week, and Io DeSumo comes into town next weekend.
Yeah, DeSumo's number one on their list has been number one. Nolly was up in the top 3 for sure. Mm-hmm. Nolly and DeSumo had been talking a lot, and Nolly had indicated to DeSumo he was coming to Illinois at least 4 or 5 days ago, and then a couple of days later he announced that Illinois is out. So you don't know what they're thinking, and what they say is one thing, and what and the word that we get might be something else. It's a tough situation. The timing is terrible on this event, on this scandal business, because whatever you want to say, Underwood's name is connected with it, and it's just a little shaky. But I say that. At the same time, Little, a great basketball player out of the East, I believe, South or East, I'm not sure where he's from, announced for North Carolina 2 days before the Friday in which North Carolina was supposed to announce their sanctions. So sometimes sanctions bother you and sometimes they don't. Now, that's been postponed, as you
yes.
know.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, here's a guy that made an announcement that he's coming to North Carolina just as that was to be announced. They didn't announce because they got some kind of a fundraising thing there, and they want to postpone it. They don't want to spoil the fundraising effort by announcing their sanctions, but it'll come soon now. We know they're done. It's just a case of announcing it. But isn't that interesting that Little would announce right on the eve of that? You would think you would wait. I mean, why wouldn't you wait until you know they might not be eligible for the NCAA next year?
Yeah, that's very likely. I think it's very possible that's going to be one of the sanctions. And again, it was just widely reported on Thursday they were coming out. I think a lot of people got excited that we finally reached this point that these sanctions are going to come out, because this is easily the longest investigation that I've witnessed in my short time of paying attention to this kind of stuff, and it just continues to drag out and delay after delay. And I'm with you. I'm sure it's because of the fundraising that was supposed to be announced yesterday, and so maybe it'll be into next week. But I'm surprised that they're getting a kid, Nasir Little, of that caliber, knowing that, not knowing, but potentially could be out of the postseason. Louisville's dealing with their own situation. They're losing recruits, and Illinois is trying to get on a couple of those, and Courtney Ramey and another Anthony Simons. So it's surprising to me, but it's North Carolina, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and Louisville has lost their head coach. They've lost 2 assistant coaches as of yesterday. They've been dropped. Obviously, they won't be back. So you've got a situation there where you have an interim head coach. He's got a couple of members from the staff working to help him in practice. And yet, Louisville's got a really good basketball team. Without Bowen, Louisville's got another really good basketball team, which may not be affected by this other than the lack of a coach, of course. But as far as the talent, they've got 5 terrific starters and a good good bench.
Yeah, those 2 assistants were placed on leave yesterday. So all 3 assistants now are no longer assistants, with David Padgett moving into the interim role and those 2 assistants being placed on leave. So they have 3 guys who were not able to coach on the floor, who were not able to recruit just yesterday, were now moved into those positions to help them, coach their basketball team here in the opening weeks of practice and try to get ready for the season. But players are going to play and they're going to do what they need to do. And I think they'll be right from a coaching standpoint. But it's just really odd to see at this time of year such a shakeup on a staff. But this is just what's going on with the bribery scandal.
Yeah, and I think that there might be a feeling. The reason I brought it up, there might be a feeling in our community that, boy, Louisville's really in trouble this year, that their basketball team's in trouble. It's not. They're just like Penn State was in football. They've still got talent, and they're going to be good in basketball.
Kenny Johnson and Jordan Flair were the ones that were put on leave. Let's take a quick phone call before we take a timeout. Our guest lineup today, Derek Piper, plenty more Illini basketball recruiting. We'll be talking to him at 8:30, 8:50, Glenn Mason. former Minnesota coach, former Illinois assistant, going to be here in Iowa City. Is he on the call for the Big Ten Network? We'll get him in here at 8:50. Then at 9:10, Scott Docterman of the Land of Ten really wrote a couple of good columns previewing this game, and one on the stability of the two programs, Iowa and Illinois. A really good piece. If you get a chance to take a look at that, we'll talk to Scott about that and more. Let's go to Alan in Montrose this morning. Alan, how are you?
Pretty good, guys. It's a lovely morning, a little breezy, and that's just fine. But I guess I'm a little early because you got Derek Piper coming on. I was wondering who the next recruits are that we're after. Did we lose out on the kid in the state of Illinois that we were really high after?
Well, they're still in on the last two players from Illinois. Yes, I mean, DeSumo is supposed to be coming. I mean, he's indicated that he's coming. He's indicated to them that they're going to get him, but that's speculation on my part, of course. I mean, he can change his mind, but
we've learned, that happens a lot.
Other than Nolly, who we didn't know much about, has there been anybody else we thought we were going to get? I don't think so.
Not this confidently, and I feel like this is different because his parents, his mom tweeted out yesterday that, you know, this recruitment is being run by his father and me, and if you hear anything from anybody else and you didn't hear from us, it's not true.
That's,
I mean,
she used
a different word yesterday, but I'm not going to say it on the air. But
I think they may have offered like 30 players. Isn't that fair? I mean, it was over 30 at one point.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Of those 30, Illinois has only, there's only been one that indicated that I have had indication is coming, and that's DeSumo. And he's number one. Excuse me?
Is he a guard?
Yes.
He's the point guard.
Yes. Yeah, he's a tall point. He's a two-way guard. I mean, he's a scorer and a playmaker.
He's a five-star. He's ranked 20th in the country.
He's really good.
Yeah, he's a tremendous talent, and Illinois would love to add. I know they got a lot of guards right now, but that's a kid you definitely get, especially when it's in your own backyard.
I understand that. Before, we need big guys. Where's our next options at now?
That's a problem.
Yeah, that's
a problem.
It's been
for a long time.
Yep, they've missed out on those. Condit and Castleton this week, and then Luke Kasunis went to UConn.
Well, who's next? I guess Derek Capella's there, right?
Well, they got a big guy from Finland in as of yesterday, I believe.
The 6'6 wing is supposed to be here.
They're bringing guys in, big guys, but they just haven't been able to land one yet. Talen Horton Tucker, who's a forward, is also under consideration. I don't know if they're going to get him. I don't have the same feeling about him that I have about DeSumo, but he's the other guy that's high on their list.
Do we not go after junior college players like we used to because of grades and too hard to get them in? Is that what?
I'm not able to answer. I don't know the reason why we haven't gone after junior college, and maybe he didn't want to go that way. Maybe it had something to do with grades. I have no idea. I really don't.
Well, the last several coaches have been that way. I mean, I can't remember one real recent, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's everybody. Every coach has got a different feeling. I think that Underwood's trying to do is build it up and he just hasn't gone for junior college players, but maybe that'll change. I don't know. Maybe he's just learning something here. He's been declined and turned down on so many this year. Maybe he'll have a different approach next year. We'll see.
Okay.
I mean, he's got to find a center from somewhere.
Yeah, they absolutely do, and they'll continue looking. We'll see how it works out. So, all right, Alan, thanks so much. We got to run. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll talk more about Illini football. Again, in Iowa City today, the Illini have not won here since 1999, but this is only the fifth visit for Illinois since that time. So we'll talk more Illinois football coming up. Again, Derek Piper is at 8:30. More Saturday Sports Talk next here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. I'm Michael Kaiser. He's Lauren Tate. Thanks for joining us today. I'm live in Iowa City. Kickoff at 11 a.m. this morning between the Hawkeyes and the Illini. The Illini right now 2-2 on the season. The Hawkeyes 3-2, the all-time series between these two squads. Illinois actually leads it 38-32 with two ties. The series dates back to 1899. The Illini actually hold a slim margin in Iowa City, 18-17 with two ties here in Iowa City. But again, the Illini have not won here since 1999. Last year in Champaign, the Iowa Hawkeyes won 28-0 and have won four straight against Illinois. The Illini lost here 29-20 in 2015. So, Lauren, it's going to be a really difficult task for the Illini today to try to, you know, get a win on the road. A new quarterback under center, Jeff George. He played against South Florida, but really has trouble not turning the football over.
Well, I think when you throw a lot of balls, and he is a gunslinger, you have deflected balls, you have balls that are just a little off the mark, and they're interceptions. Maybe this will be a day where he'll be able to hit his receivers without that happening, but it's something you worry about for sure.
Yeah, it definitely is. So we'll see how things go. You know, Mike Epstein only got 10 carries last week, and you're going to need, I would imagine, with the weather right now, it's windy, a little windy, but it's cloudy and expecting rain throughout the day today, that Mike Epstein's going to see the ball a lot today. I think they're going to need to see that from earlier, like earlier in the season.
Well, maybe so, but I'm still confused by the fact that Illinois used four ball carriers all in the first half in the last game against Nebraska. And I didn't understand why they just didn't let Epstein run, but they wanted to use Corbin. They brought in the other two. I mean, Kendrick Foster dropped two kickoffs, but he still got some carries in the running game. So I don't know exactly what's going on, but Bonner was in there early, and Corbin was in real early in that game. I mean, in that first drive, you know, with the second possession of the game, Illinois drove from its own 29-yard line all the way to the three.
Yep.
And in that drive, they used Corbin, Epstein, Epstein, Bonner, and Corbin in that drive. And I don't get it. I mean, that early in the game they were just alternating them. And the next time they got the ball, Epstein ran for 13, then Corbin ran for 7, Epstein ran for 2. I mean, that's what they were doing. They were running the ball, and then Foster came in, and he ran the ball. So they had four running backs at one position.
That drive lasted 9 minutes, and you kind of wish they could have continued that. Let's go to the phones here, Bill and Rantoul. Bill, how are you?
Good. How are you this morning, gentlemen?
Good. Not too bad.
I know you're talking football now, but I just had a quick basketball comment. Back in 89, when Kuliava decided not to come back to school, I think it speeded us up. A center to me is not a huge need anymore because nobody has him. I'd like to have a guy 6'9", you know, 6'10", that's nice. But if he can't run, I really don't want him because I think he just slows everybody down. And if we're going to shoot a lot of shots in the first 7 seconds, you're not going to – a center going underneath the block, you know, on the block and trying to get the ball down deep, not going to help you that much.
I think that's right. You know, I think we worry too much about a big center. The only thing I worry about a center from my standpoint is defensively.
Yes.
You've got to have somebody guard the other guy. And I made some comment, you know, there aren't that many centers in the Big Ten. Then I started running them down, and everybody's got one. Almost everybody's got a guy that's a threat offensively in the post. And so you need somebody to stand in and hold ground in there. And if you have a skinny guy that can run, that doesn't always work.
Not always. Like I say, I would take speed over size any day.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's kind of a new game, you know. Look at the Warriors and stuff. They kind of remind me. I don't watch pro basketball, but from what I've seen, there are a lot of guys that are just extremely athletic. They can run, you know, can shoot, and I think that's what you need in today's game.
All right, Bill. Thanks so much. We got to run. Let's go to Lloyd and Champaign real quick. Then we'll bring in Derek Piper here after the break. Lloyd. You there, Lloyd?
Yeah, go ahead.
What do you got for us?
Yeah, I was wondering what the weather was there. It's supposed to be 45-mile-an-hour winds here and rainy this afternoon. What's the weather in Iowa City?
Right now it's cloudy and it's 67 degrees and winds are out of the south at 10 miles per hour. So, but I can feel the wind blowing into the booth here. But it was raining this morning on the way to the stadium, and it was raining all day yesterday, and it's expected to rain throughout the day today a little bit. So we'll just kind of see how things go. There's it says a 70% chance of rain. Kickoff a 45% chance of rain. So
well, the wind is the factor that I'm more worried about than the rain, because trying to pass in 45 mile an hour winds or 40 mile an hour winds in the kicking game is pretty critical with us.
That's not expected here. Looking at the forecast, it said the wind at 11 o'clock is supposed to be 13 miles per hour. So
good.
Obviously, Mother Nature does what she wants out of nowhere.
Champagne's supposed to get it. So good thing we don't have a home game, I guess. So.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Lloyd. Bye. Yep. Bye. We'll take a timeout, bring in Derek Piper of IlliniEnquirer.com next to get his thoughts on Illini basketball recruiting, Landers Nolley, and what's next for the Illini coaching staff. That's coming up next here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. I'm live in Iowa City. Lauren back at the Radio Ranch. And Illinois football gets things underway against the Hawkeyes at 11 a.m. this morning. Illinois 2-2 on the season. Iowa coming off a two-game losing streak. Both teams are. Iowa losing to Penn State and then Michigan State. We're going to talk some Illini basketball recruiting now with Derek Piper of IlliniEnquirer.com. Give Derek a follow on Twitter at DPiperScout. Derek, good morning. How are you?
That probably has more juice.
Hello? You guys there?
Hello?
Lauren Tate, how are you?
Good, good.
Yeah, we got Derek in there?
Yeah.
Great.
Go ahead.
How you doing this morning, Derek?
I'm good. How you doing?
Not too bad, sir. Well, about 25 hours or so ago, Illini fans dealt another blow and with a fourth recruit this week choosing to go somewhere else. So kind of talk Illini fans off the ledge a little bit because the main target in Ayo Dosunmu is still out there, and he's coming to town next week.
Yeah, still have a big opportunity, obviously, with Ayo, and he's your number one target, a guy that's a five-star point guard, can really transcend the backcourt when you think about putting him with Mark Smith and Trent Frazier, Demonte Williams, and also Tijon Lucas. So still big opportunity in this class. Also, THT is still out there. He's supposed to come the weekend after Ayo. They're going to bring in Elias Valentinen, a very good shooter from Finland this week. So still some other options. Obviously, you'd never want to have a week where you have four targets announcing, one that was just on your campus, and Lucas Kasunis. I know that was one that they're just kind of jumping in late and maybe hoping to pressure some of those other guys, but really your priority big guys, and Colin Castleton, that's the one they really wanted, and to have Michigan swoop in late and steal him, that one really hurts. And it kind of just shows that this staff, even though there's a lot of good feels about, and they're for very good reason about where the staff is going, and I feel like, you know, it's a different staff in terms of comparing it to John Gross, but still susceptible to some of those other things in the past where Condon's dad wants him to go to Iowa State, and that's what happens. A bigger program like Michigan comes in, a lot better track record, more recent success. They're able to steal him away and Colin Castleton. So, and then Landers Nolley yesterday, so a sharp shooter that was telling Ayo that he was coming. Obviously, we've seen some dishonesty in recruiting before, so that's nothing new. But, yeah, tough week for sure.
What do you think, if any at all, that the bribery scandal is playing? Because even though Brad Underwood hasn't been tied to this, his assistant, former assistant, is, and of course was arrested and then fired by Oklahoma State. Do you think that is playing a role at all, or are these kids not even paying attention to that sort of thing?
It's hard to tell, really. I think some people are playing it up too big. I know there was talk out there that Colin chose Michigan because Dan Dockich mentioned that Underwood should be fired, and obviously Dockich has a connection to Beilein, and then he goes to Michigan. So it's a factor out there. It's something that you can't deny, and obviously I would be surprised if Colin didn't hear about it when he was in Ann Arbor, and same with some of these other guys talking to other coaches. But at the same time, you can't sit there and pretend to really know, and at the same time, I think that it also discounts maybe Michigan's sell. They made so much sense for him, being that Mo Wagner is probably going to go, more than likely going to go pro, and he's a very prototypical guy in comparison to him. So I think it is playing a little bit of a factor, but in terms of my opinion, I think a bigger factor is the fact that, you know, Underwood just hasn't done it here yet. They need to get out on the floor and show their product. They're selling a vision right now, and it'll be a lot easier for them once they have some product to sell.
You know, we got a caller a while ago that I kind of agree with about the fact that you really don't need pure centers anymore. If you got a running game, maybe I'm exaggerating when I say you don't need one. You need one defensively, but offensively, I would think that You know, I would think, for instance, that Finke should fit in pretty well with this program this year because of his scoring ability, and he's reasonably mobile in getting down the court. But defensively, what do you think it means?
Yeah, that's a good point. And Colin Castleton and George Condit both aren't bangers or anything. You know, aren't guys that are going to spot up on the post had they gotten one of them. So I think it kind of shows the type of center that they're looking at. There's no doubt about it that Brad wants a guy that's physical, as they say, a rim runner. Offensively, you know, they want a guy that can go up and down the floor and can also shoot. But at the defensive end, they do need someone that can block shots. They do need somebody that can rebound. That's really important. I mean, this is a Underwood's a coach that's always had a good defensive and offensive rebounding team. So you need guys that can attack the glass and rebound. So obviously you need that. You don't need
Egwu.
Maybe that. Yeah, Nana Egwu, yeah. I think Eboy Bowden can remind you of Nana Egwu. And I think they're pretty high on him. I think he's ahead of schedule in terms of where they thought he would be. And he runs like a deer. He's a little skinny now, needs to add some strength, but when you look to 2019, a Francis Okoro would be pretty nice for them. He's a guy that kind of does both. He can really run, get out in transition, but at the same time, he's built like a truck, and he can block shots and rebound.
Well, what do you know about the current juniors, you know, that they're after?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of opportunity in the state with E.J. Liddell, who I think is a stud. I don't know why he's not ranked in the top 100. I think he played really well over the summer. 17U St. Louis Eagles over in Peach Jam, played with Francis Okoro, who is a top 40 big man over at Normal West. And Illinois is really working that hard to get the inroads there. And I know that his camp has kind of kept things slow and not taking a lot of visits. He is going to be here in Champaign today for an unofficial visit. That is Francis Okoro, the big man from Normal West. He was at Purdue last weekend. So just really starting this process, there's a lot of places that he wants to go see. And then there's two guys that aren't in the state now but are from Chicago. Malik Hall playing over in Sunrise Christian in Kansas, a guy that Jamal Walker really, really loves and has recruited him for a long time. And then also Khalil Whitney, who's over in New Jersey, plays with the Macaron Fire from Chicago. That's going to be one that Chin Coleman is going to work really, really hard. And obviously they have, you know, Chin has really good plugs to the Irvin. So those four guys, I think, are the main ones. And so to have those ties to in-state, I think that's a big opportunity for the staff.
Big story out of Simeon this week or this past week's about Brown.
Kizo Brown, yeah.
Who would be a senior this year.
Mm-hmm.
And mental breakdown, basically, which he also had as a sophomore. Sounds like his basketball days might be over.
Yeah, that's really sad for him. And a guy that, when he was young, was thought to be one of these stars coming up in this class. And I know now we look at it and we see Io and we see Taylen Horton Tucker. But earlier on, you know, coming out of middle school into high school, Kizo Brown was talked about probably more than anybody up in Chicago. So sad to hear for him, not only for basketball, but just hope that, you know, he's able to figure it all out, because he's a good kid. I've gotten to know him, and also a really good shooter and someone that Simeon definitely likes and had a lot of expectations for him coming back this year.
You understand that he will not be – I mean, he's not in school
even. Yep.
So he won't be graduating, I guess.
Right.
That's really tough.
Yeah, hope everything works out for him for sure.
Derek Piper of IlliniInquirer.com. Give him a follow on Twitter at DPiperScout, talking Illini basketball recruiting this morning. Well, Derek, as you just look at this situation continue to develop, and Brad Underwood's going to need to win some games to try to convince some recruits down the road. You mentioned some of the recruits that in the future. This season, we're out to see practices underway. What are your expectations, realistic expectations, for the Illini basketball team this year?
Yeah, they're going to be a middle-of-the-pack Big Ten team, and obviously it's going to take some time to get things going and running a new system at both ends of the floor. I think people do forget that it's also different on defense, although I think it is different in a really good sense, because, you know, they're going to pressure the ball, they're going to try to trap, they're going to try to create turnovers, and that leads into what they want to do on their wheelhouse on offense, which is transition. So they're going to have some young guys, but there is some talent on this team for sure. You know, Mark Smith big expectations for him coming in, even as a freshman. I think he likes that expectation on his shoulders. He's Big Ten ready with his body, a guy that can do a lot of different things, take the ball off the bounce, can shoot the three. Tijon, I think, is your leader. I think he's kind of the heart and soul of this team. He's going to make sure that it's a fight for guys like Mark and also, you know, Trent coming off the bench to be able to earn those minutes. So I think one of the biggest X factors is Mark Alstorck. Is he going to come in and take good shots? It's a guy that has shown that he can make any shot on the floor, but also not shy about taking any of those when he was at Wright State. And obviously there was a different talent level around him there and a guy that wants to get to the NBA. So down low, you're worried maybe about depth. Laron Black and Michael Finke, I think, can give you what you need. Maybe defensively is something that you worry about. Greggy Boy Bowden, he's going to get thrown to the fire right away, but maybe he will surprise some people. I think he can play double-digit minutes right away. So this is a team, I think, that can be on the bubble, that can challenge for an NCAA tournament berth, just because of how good of a coach Brad Underwood is and the different style they're going to play. They say they're going to play harder than anybody in the country, and that's going to make people uncomfortable. So we'll see about the depth. It's definitely going to get challenged, and we'll see what these young guys got.
Well, it practices, what, I think just a week in now. I think last Saturday was the first official practice. I know Tijon Lucas, how is he doing with his concussion? When is he expected back soon? Is he back?
Yeah, I haven't heard a full timeline on when he's supposed to return. I've been following his Snapchat, and it looks like now he's out and about now. He was stuck in his room for a little while with the lights out, although I don't know why he was on his phone. I don't think you're supposed to be on your phone when you have a concussion, but he seems to be just fine. He was out driving around and over at Ubbin late this week. So I'm not sure when he'll be back at practice. Obviously, you have some time here with about a month until the season to take some time and make sure he's okay, and you don't want to, you know, mess around with any serious injuries like that with a head injury. But at the same time, I think the expectation is he'll be back pretty soon.
We got to get Lauren Tate on Snapchat. I follow Mark Alstorck on Snapchat, and he's always posting his shots, how many shots he's taken, how many he's made in that machine there at the practice facility. Lauren, you learned a lot from that. Sometimes he's out walking around on campus.
I'm worn out on Twitter. Don't get me on anything else.
Yeah.
They called off practice, was it Thursday or Friday? Was that for recruiting purposes?
I'm sure if it was, yeah, it probably was. Yeah.
They had. You want to tell us anything? Do you know anything about the young man from Finland?
Yeah, 6'5". Antigua went and saw him last month. A guy that he knew about through his connections with the FIBA, the international basketball.
So we heard that Antigua was overseas, you think that's where he was?
That is where he was. Yeah. Yep, he was seeing him. Arizona State had come in right before him, and Oregon State was out there as well. So now he's down to Arizona State and Illinois. He's going to be at Arizona State this weekend, come to Illinois beginning on Tuesday, and he's going to make a decision. And he's a guy that he did suffer a knee injury. I don't know the exact severity of it. So that was something that he's been recovering from. But last summer, he got rave reviews when he was playing in the World Championships at FIBA. A guy that can really shoot the ball, pull-up jumper as well, and he's a plus athlete, I think. He's not a fantastic athlete, but pretty good, can move around, make some plays on defense, and he would be a pretty good player. I know that Evan Daniels, our at Scout, who's one of our national guys, said that had he played in the U.S., he'd probably be a top 50, top 75 guy.
Last thoughts on Talen Horton Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
I really like him. I like the physicality of him. However, is there a problem playing with DeSumo?
It depends who you ask. There's still people out there who are adamant that these guys will not play together, no matter what anybody says. It depends on who you talk to. I think that on Illinois' side, they believe that they've made up some really good ground, that they're trying to smooth out that relationship, that Chin Coleman is going to do some talking to both Rob Smith, to Talen Horton Tucker's mom, to Nick Irvin, Nick and Mike Irvin. So they think they can smooth it out when the time comes. It'll be interesting to see for sure. They think that they've made up some pretty good ground, both with Talen and his mom. They have had a visit planned for a long time, for weeks now. It hasn't been announced.
But he doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
Yeah, he doesn't like – I don't know why he's doing that. A guy that I thought that liked the attention quite a bit. Actually, I know that he does, but I guess he likes people speculating about him because he's had these visits slated and kind of been frustrating for some of the reporters out there who have known the dates, but he didn't necessarily confirm. So he finally confirmed him to Georgia Tech this weekend, Iowa State next weekend, and then a date that Illinois had for a long time is the weekend after that to come to Champaign.
Derek, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned Mac Urban Fire and Nick and Mike Urban there. What is the relationship now? We're about 6+ months in since Brad Underwood and his staff has been here. What is the relationship like with them? Is it better than the last staff? Is it good, just as good, or how are they progressing in their relationship?
Yeah, it's definitely better than the last staff. I know they did like Paris Parham, but Chin Coleman just brings a different dynamic, being that, you know, he grew up with Mike. He knows those guys. He coached with the Mac Urban Fire program. He's like a brother to them. So they want to take care of him. You know, they see him as one of their own. That's not to say that I think they've been painted in a bad picture before because some of their guys haven't come to Illinois. I don't think that necessarily means they didn't want their guys to go to Illinois. That's just kind of how it played. And maybe, you know, you look at the Jalen Brunson thing. It was actually Jalen Brunson's dad that had more control than anybody. Marcus Levette, same thing. So, but right now, they are definitely pro-Illinois, definitely pro-Chin Coleman. Brad Underwood, they're very impressed, not only with his track record, he's a winner, but also they love his style of play. That's something that, you know, a lot of AAU programs like to do, even Morgan Park. They run the floor really, really hard, love to play up-tempo. They see it as like an NBA transition-style offense, and they really love that. So Illinois has done a great job with them, and if they do get Io Desunmu, that'd be a huge sign of things changing up there.
One last question from me. AAU programs have really taken over in recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
However, this latest scandal seems to reflect badly on the shoe companies and AAU.
Right.
Do you see any future changes in the summer AAU play?
That's a great question. I've talked to some people, and I know I've seen some tweet that, you know, this is going to be the end of the shoe brand companies controlling AAU basketball. I just don't see it happening unless bigger. I know this is huge right now, what's out there and what's been alleged, obviously, but there's so much money in all of this, and it really helps not only the players, it helps the players get seen in terms of having this structure, and you're not in some back middle school gyms a lot of times when you're playing on the shoe brand circuits. It's at a bigger location, multiple gyms, coaches can see multiple games really at the same time, can spend first half in one gym, second half in another. It just makes it a lot more structured. I know they got to clean some things up for sure, but it helps the players and it helps the coaches in terms of the way it's structured and with the shoe brand and everything. So if they're able to clean it up and maybe cut out some bad pieces there, I still think it's going to be the same, but we have not seen the end of this scandal for sure.
Well, Derek, we appreciate your time as always this morning. Thanks so much. We'll be watching the recruiting trail as it continues to move along, and definitely IO next week. And I think Illini fans are hanging by a thread right now, if you will. They're just chewing their fingernails and a little bit nervous, especially about IO next week.
Yeah, they absolutely are. You should see our message board. But, yeah.
I don't know about that kind of time.
Maybe a different tune next weekend, I think.
Yep. All right, Derek, have a good rest of your weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yep. That's Derek Piper of IlliniEnquirer.com. Give him a follow on Twitter at DPiperScout. Coming up next, Glenn Mason. He's in the booth with us here in Iowa City. We'll talk to him about the Illini, the Hawkeyes, and the Big Ten. That's coming up next here on DWS.
Bad snap. Bobble. Oh! Scooped oh! up. Here come the Spartans. Down the sideline.
Oh!
Racing into the end zone.
Are you kidding me?
Racing into the end zone is Jalen.
Oh,
Watts. Jackson. Touchdown, MSU.
Touchdown.
Folks, no flags.
No Spartans. Oh, my God.
Piling on each other in the end zone. It's over. The Spartans win again.
George, what a call. My God. My God. How did that happen?
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Lauren Tate, Michael Kaiser with you. I'm live in Iowa City for Illinois and the Iowa Hawkeyes. That's from 2 years ago. Michigan State and Michigan play again today in the Big House. Glenn Mason of the Big Ten Network, former Illini assistant, coaching several stops for Minnesota, of course, for several years. Coach, you've been in the broadcasting business for a while now. When you hear something like that, was the Michigan radio network, their Michigan State radio network, I should say. You know, it's kind of fun being when things like that happen.
You got to settle down. It's only a game. Come on. You know, I hate to tell you that this week we played that a number of times, the actual footage on our network.
Yep.
And I hate to tell you, every time I see that, I think back to when I was still coaching 2005 against Wisconsin. And all we have to do is punt the ball, and the game's over. We won the game, and my punter dropped the ball and got kicked, and we lost. And, you know, so it brings back nightmares. Hey, Michael, I got to tell you
something. I should have played that for you then.
Yeah, yeah, great. It's great to see you, but I'm greatly disappointed.
Yes, I know.
You know what I think of Lauren Tate, and and he's not here right now. I wanted to see him, and I have a cake for him. I wanted to sing happy birthday to him.
Hey.
And he's not here. I can't believe it.
Well, I'll just have to watch it on TV. That's all. I was coming, but I've been in the process of kind of making some decisions here lately, and I'm down to one column a week, and I'm just kind of fading from the scene slowly, you know, just – But
that is everybody's loss if that's true, and I mean that. We were talking before we went on the air, and I remember vividly being a young assistant football coach at Illinois, and you arrive in town and you're an absolutely nobody, and one of the first people that reached out and welcomed me and was very nice to me was a guy by the name of Lauren Tate, and I never forgot that, and I always appreciate spending time with you.
Well, that's a long time ago, but tell us, bring us up to date. Tell us about this game today and what you think. What would Illinois have to do to pull off a surprise?
Oh, boy. You know, I don't think that, well, first of all, any time that you're playing 11 true freshmen, major college football, Big Ten football, your chance of being successful is not very good. In saying that, do I think that Illinois is good enough to beat Iowa? The answer is no. But Iowa is sure capable of beating themselves. They're not playing rock-solid football. So the bottom line is if Illinois plays well, and they've got some playmakers that we know, and they get the ball in their hands offensively and make it a switch to Jeff George at quarterback, and I think the reason they did it because they got guys like Malik Turner and Mike Dudek out there, and they're not getting the ball. If they could make some plays and they could rally and play some defense and not give up the big play, they could be successful. When you look at Iowa, they lost to two straight games, heartbreaker to Penn State, where if you look at the statistics, it was you would think that Penn State won that game going away, you know, but they didn't. And then a week ago against Michigan State, where they had trouble holding on to the football. They've had trouble holding on to the football. They've had a lot of fumbles all this year. But, Lauren, it's amazing to me, they can't run the football. And that's Kirk Ferentz, that's Iowa football, as we know. Control the ball on offense, run the ball, play good defense, good kicking game, and have enough patience to win games close if they have to. They rushed for 19 yards a week ago, the week before against Penn State. A little bit better than, but not much. They're really struggling.
Yeah, you know, and I saw that Iowa State game, and I thought Wadley was terrific. And I mentioned that, and then, of course, I realized that they just couldn't run. Michigan State must have just stacked them up in the line. It must be at the line because I know Wadley can run.
Yeah, it's not Wadley. He's got a lot of talent. I think he's the second best back in this league behind Saquon Barkley, which is another whole story. But when I've watched the tape, I'm really amazed. You know, the Iowa offensive line won the Joe Moore Award last year, which notes the best offensive line in the country. Now, they don't return intact. They lost, you know, a couple guys to graduation, but they had enough guys coming back there that you think they'd be pretty good. Now, they've had to jockey some guys around because of some injuries, but when you watch them, man, they're playing like five freshmen up there, and they're not freshmen, if you get my point.
Glenn Mason of the Big Ten Network joining us here on Saturday Sports Talk on DWS, former Illinois assistant coach, also a head coach at Minnesota, Kansas, Kent State. Always good to have him on with us. Well, as you look at, you know, we mentioned both teams coming into this game on a two-game losing streak. does Iowa just need to find a way to get that offensive line straight now to try to get things rolling for them? What do they need to do to try to fix their season? We mentioned Illinois's got freshmen. It's going to be possibly a long season for them.
Yeah, I mean, there's when you start looking for solutions to turn it around, Iowa's a lot simpler, I think, if that's the right word, than Illinois, because they're playing good defense at Iowa. They really have an outstanding linebacker crew. On offense, the big question was the quarterback, Nate Stanley, and I think he's playing pretty good. You know, he's thrown 133 passes since his last interception, and his first interception was on his third pass that he ever threw. So, obviously, he's making, you know, good decisions. They good have a good running back in Wiley. They got a couple good running backs. So, it's the offensive line. If they can get that straightened out and they can, rather than rushing for 19 yards a game, they're getting over the 200 mark, which normally is their formula, I think they'd be okay.
Patience is a word that doesn't get used anymore in collegiate athletics, really at any level. Fans need patience with Illinois right now. This is really year one for Lovie because he got here so late in his first season. The recruiting class wasn't his for last season. He's got a recruiting class now. Those kids are playing. How much patience do Illinois fans need to give Lovie some time to actually get his players, you know, the experience and the strength, especially on the line?
I would say more than patience, they need intelligence. And what I mean by that, everybody's laughing when I said that. You know, there's only two things I believe in college athletics. There's results and there's hope. Mm-hmm. And I promise you there's a lot more hope out there than there are results, because results are really hard to get. So what happens is when a lot of schools, and Illinois is a classic example, Minnesota is another example, Indiana is another example. When you go through and you're not getting the results you want, rather than sitting down and thinking about what you have to do, they buy new hope. Mm-hmm. They change a coach, and everybody thinks, well, this is going to be it. Now, case in point, you look at the University of Iowa. Now, think about this.
Oh, yeah.
They've had two football coaches since 1979, okay? Mm-hmm. They've had three athletic directors since 1968. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is, that I don't know if it's patience or whatever, but they hire the right guy, they get behind him, they're committed to him. And you even think about Kirk Ferentz here, who's, what is in his 19th year, I think, here at Iowa. It hasn't been all bed of roses. It's been up and down. And sometimes some people have gotten nervous and they call for his head, and then he's followed with, I remember a couple of years ago or 2 years ago, the year 3 years ago, they were calling for his head. The next year he ran the table during the regular season. So I think that you got to believe that the revolving door system just doesn't work.
Illinois had 9 head coaches in that same time period since 1979.
You look at me. I mean, it sounds like I'm politic for myself, but after the 2006 season, and, you know, did I win a Big Ten championship? No. Did I go to the Rose Bowl? No. We went to 7 bowl games, you know, in 10 years.
But that's pretty good.
Since I was let go, they hired Tim Brewster. He lasted Illinois guy, by the way.
Yeah.
He lasted maybe 3 years, and he was gone. And then they had an interim, Jeff Horton, and then he was gone. They hired Jerry Kill, and he was gone. And then Tracy Clays was in, and he's gone. Mm-hmm. And now they got P.J. Fleck. So they've had 5.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
that's
crazy.
That's just 11 seasons.
Yeah. And if you put the pencil to how much money was wasted, taxpayer money was wasted, in paying off coaches, me included, and my staff, and then hiring a new staff and paying them more money and moving expenses and then getting rid of them, paying them off, it's astronomical.
Well, you know, what you say is right, but you still have somebody has to come along and have really solid success in order to sustain that. I mean, if Iowa wouldn't have had all this success over, I call it success over 40 years, they've been consistent, let's put it that way, reasonably consistent. But you have to have somebody at the basis of it, like Wisconsin, for example. Alvarez started that whole thing. It's still Alvarez's program. I mean, you have to have somebody that really takes charge.
I would agree with you, absolutely. But at the same time, all too often, and maybe that's where the patience comes in, people get nervous and they cut bait, you know, too early. You know, Kirk's first 2 years at Iowa were not very good. People
right.
weren't very, you know, happy. And let's say that in that third year he didn't show improvement. Let's say he struggled again. would they have been back to the same old deal where Iowa changed every couple of years and they had 18, you know, straight losing seasons? I don't know. I think one of the classic examples is Frank Beamer, the Hall of Fame coach from Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. You check the record, and he was an alum there. He went through and he struggled, and they darn near got rid of him. I mean, to the 11th hour, and they decided, okay, we'll give him one more year. The rest is history. Mm-hmm. I mean, look what he's built in that program. So I think that you have to do a great job of vetting. You have to hire the right guy, and the right guy to do it, and not just be the guy that's going to win the press conference, if you get my drift. And all too often, I'm critical at athletic directors out there. They want to hire a guy to win the press conference so the alums and everybody are patting the guy in the back and saying, oh, we hired the secondary coach from Alabama. We're going to be just like Alabama. That's absolutely absurd, you know. So you hire the right guy, and then you commit to him, and you go, and you hang in there. And I guess every night before you go to bed, you get on your knees. If the guy made that decision, say, I hope I got the right guy in place.
ADs a lot, when the new AD comes in, it happens at programs all over the country, they want their own guys. Really, in any of the major sports, not just football. That seems to set programs back, you know, because, you know, Mike Thomas came in, and Ron Zook was having trouble at the end, but they were making back-to-back bowl games. Recruiting was starting to tail off a little bit. He lost Mike Loxley to another program. But then hired Tim Beckman, and that set him back. Do you think maybe ADs sometimes when they're new, they have a quick trigger finger there?
Well, you know, I think they do if a program is struggling again. It's an easy way for them to buy hope again, mm-hmm. you know. And I remember, I'm a coach. I'm not an athletic director,
yes.
you know.
Yep.
So I see it from that side. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's an old saying, Lauren, I think you would agree with this, that, you know, if you're a major college football coach and you lose the AD that hired you, you got a problem.
Yeah,
if you lose the president that hired you, you got a problem. If you lose them both, you got no chance. You know.
Well, you know, I see Nebraska right now. They bring in, and the new AD there is going to have to fire the football coach and the basketball coach both in 1 year, which is really what happened here when Thomas came in. Because unless Riley can turn it around, unless the basketball program can shape up, I think that both of those, and we just played Nebraska, and they're okay, but I think he's got trouble the rest of the season. What do you think?
Oh, I agree with you. You know, I lived that Nebraska in the late 80s and the 90s in the old Big 8 Conference, and they were really, mm-hmm. really, really good, you know. And people out there, the expectations, they're still living in the 90s. And now this Nebraska team and all the Nebraska teams since they – in recent history, they're a shadow of, you know, what they used to be out there. But, you know, the expectations haven't changed. And, you know, when I first went to Kansas, Lauren, in the Big 8 Conference, I was amazed that when you go up to Lincoln and play, everybody up there was complaining about Tom Osborne. Oh, he can't win the big one, you know, and all that stuff. And all of a sudden he won 3 national championships, and then they're building a statue in his name. But, I mean, that's the standard. And, you know, they don't take kindly to losing to the people that they lost. You think about Nebraska losing at home to Northern Illinois, and that's not a reflection of Northern Illinois. The head football coach in Northern Illinois used to be a graduate assistant for me, and I'm you know, really proud of him. But those things don't happen, and they probably shouldn't happen when you look at the commitment and everything that they, you know, put in that program. But, you know, they play Wisconsin this week, and, you know, He played Rutgers, he played Illinois, and all of a sudden people just calmed down a little bit. But if he gets beat by Wisconsin, it starts all over again.
Well, I wanted to ask you about a guy being honored today at Purdue, Joe Tiller, and how much you knew about him, how much you got to be around him, and he passed away last weekend.
Yeah.
Just a great coach at Purdue.
Yeah, Joe came into the Big Ten the same year that I did. I went to Minnesota, he went, you know, to Purdue. And, you know, Joe was a throwback. He was a good, solid football coach, and I like to say that there's only two kinds of coaches out there. And there's guys that love to coach, and there's guys that love being the coach, if you get my drift.
Yeah.
And he loved to coach. And the story that I really like to tell about him was after I was no longer coaching, I was working for the BTN, I went in to do a game at Purdue. And Friday, you have meetings with coaches, and I went in there, and the secretary, oh, coach, I'm so sorry. Coach Tiller called. He's apologizing. He's going to be a little bit late. He's got to finish mowing his lawn, okay? And I'm sitting there, and he come in, he got grass all over it. I'm looking at him, I'm laughing, and I said, you know, and you think about it, How refreshing, Lauren, is that? In day and age when guys are flying in jets and helicopters and they got chiefs of staff, they got more guys in their staff than you know what to do. Here's Joe Tiller, as good as there is. He's mowing his lawn. Yeah. You know?
Well, we got to run here shortly, but I wanted to ask you about the Big Ten and how you see that shaping out. The East is the strongest division, of course. Penn State, ranked fourth in the country, to have a great run. Ohio State fell earlier in the year to Oklahoma, but who do you think is going to come out of the Big Ten?
Well, I think the West is a little bit clear-cut. I think most people would think that Wisconsin is going to win the West and end up in Indianapolis again. Mm-hmm. You know, and
yeah.
I think it goes to Lauren's point. You know, you got a guy in Barry Alvarez that built that program, and he's still running the program as the AD. Mm-hmm. He knows football. He knows what it takes. He knows Wisconsin, you know. I think that's a really special situation. In the East, it's a three-team race. I would think most people would believe it's Penn State, it's Ohio State, and it's Michigan, yep. And they all have to play each other. You know, so that's going to play out. I think Penn State having to play at Ohio State after how Ohio State lost last year on that blocked field goal. I know the people in Columbus have been waiting for that game. You know, they might have think they were waiting for the Oklahoma game. They've been waiting for that Penn State game. I'll say this though, Saquon Barkley. He is really, really, I can't say enough about him. When I had my meeting with Kirk Ferentz yesterday, we sat down, and the first thing he did, he looked at me, and he asked me, have you ever seen a better back than Barkley? And he said to me, you know, I haven't. Mm-hmm. He said, I can't remember ever seeing a better back than that guy. So I think it's going to be, you know, a battle, you know. And, you know, there's some other teams that are sneaky in that East. You know, you look at Michigan State's getting better. Mm-hmm. They really are. They're playing better defense. And, in the West, the team you got to watch out for a little bit, and Minnesota's playing this week, is Purdue. I think Jeff Brohm has done an unbelievable job there in West Lafayette because the last couple of years that program has been atrocious, offensively, defensively, kicking game. I was even joking around. I said their band was even bad, you know, which isn't true. But that guy overnight has taken a terrible program. Are they good? I don't know if they're good or not, but at least they're competitive.
Yep. Glenn Mason, thanks so much. We appreciate your time,
Glenn,
this morning.
Thanks a lot.
Anytime, Lauren. All right. One of my favorites.
All right. Talk to you soon. That's Glenn Mason on the Big Ten Network, former Illini assistant coach, joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Take a time out, Scott. Dr. Man up next here on DWS.
Obviously, ball security, the turnover issue, something we're going to have to address, handling the blitz, and then just, you know, overall developing the kind of confidence and grit it takes to be successful, home or away. Obviously, we're going to be a better fundamental football team this week, and that's something we'll work on like we do every week in practice, you know, take every rep and hopefully start building a little cumulative advantage on that. And then the other part is just being ready mentally. Yeah, we're going through a little bit of a shuffle, if you will. But we'll keep pushing. We got enough there, and we got the right guys and all that type of thing. So it's just a matter of pushing forward. And we're open to anything right now to help the team in any phase. We're looking at every possibility. Hopefully nobody's looking big picture. We shouldn't be. We don't need to be. And the best we can do is come out of this thing with one win before the bye, and that's our goal. It's the best we can do this week regardless. So, you know, we just need to worry about this Saturday, playing better football first and foremost. And then if we do that, hopefully we can come out with the victory.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Lauren Tate, Michael Kaiser with you. Kirk Ferentz, the head coach of the Iowa Hawkeyes earlier this week on his team and really wants to clean some stuff up. Join me now, Scott Docterman of the Land of 10. Give Scott a follow on Twitter, at Scott Docterman. Scott, good morning. How are you?
Hey, great, Michael. How are you?
Not too bad. Always good to have you on ahead of the Iowa-Illinois game. Well, the weather isn't good today. We've been talking about this. A little bit windy, but not too bad. It's not raining at the moment, but cloudy skies, and it's expected to rain. And we'll see how it has an impact on Illinois. Iowa likes to run the football. They just haven't been.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 19 yards last week. It was the worst rushing output since 2005 for Iowa. you know, and it's been a bit surprising. They have an NFL caliber running back in Akram Wadley. They've had, you know, last year the offensive line was, you know, won the Joe Moore Award, but they've had a lot of injuries and they've had to shuffle some guys around, and you could see where they've had some deficiencies out of that. I mean, you know, Michigan State and Penn State, to that matter, you know, really attacked Iowa in the interior, and they didn't win a lot of their one-on-one blocks, and then, you know, they were overwhelmed by numbers, and it really just stopped the running game before they even got a chance to get it started.
Do you think, at least going into last week, that there's a hangover from the Penn State game where they lost in the last seconds? I know Penn State dominated that game by the numbers. The final score was much closer than the actual numbers, but do you think there was some kind of hangover for Iowa going into last week at Michigan State?
I think a little bit, and it was surprising to me. I didn't think they would have one, considering, you know, they lost the Big Ten championship there in kind of similar fashion in 2015 to Michigan State. So I kind of thought that they would be more amped for that game. But, you know, really took them a quarter or so before they got into it. And, you know, defensively, they had a new cornerback starting. He got worked early. They scored two touchdown passes in the first three possessions, and then they held Michigan State in check. They just weren't able to, you know, do anything really, you know, in the first quarter, and that cost them. That cost them the game. So, by, you know, as the game went on, the defense especially was in tune. It was pretty good. The offense, on the other hand, you know, two fumbles, one in, you know, inside the five, really just crippled their opportunities to win that game. Because, you know, and this is strange territory for Iowa. They haven't been 0-2 in the Big Ten since 2008, and that year, you know, they ended up finishing, I think, you know, 9-4 overall. But you know, it was kind of the unluck of the draw as well.
Well, let's go to the phones real quick. Got a special guest on the phone lines. Lou Henson, how are you this morning, Coach?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, Lou.
Hey, Lauren, well, first of all, I want to wish you a happy birthday.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I'm not having a birthday for another month.
If you think about leaving the radio station, we're going to run you out of town. We want you to stay. And by the way, you guys, Michael, you and my good friend Ed Bonds, you guys do a tremendous job, and you get great guests. That's another thing that helps the radio station. But anyway, I want to call in and wish you a happy birthday and tell you that we really appreciate the radio show.
All right, Lou, thank you very much.
Thanks, Coach. We really appreciate that. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye.
Yep, bye.
I don't know where the idea got. I was having a birthday.
Because Glenn Jota doesn't say anything for you.
That's okay. I'm having too many of them. Hey, Scott, I want to talk to you about the history of this Iowa-Illinois series and the fact of we've kind of lost the competitive nature of this game. And go into that and explain why.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, they've had two big kind of you know, endings, in, if you will. One was, you know, 52-67, which you know all about, you know, with the punch here at Kinnick, or then it was Iowa Stadium, and Rocky Ryan and the crowd charging him and apples being thrown on the field, and the team's cooled it for about 15 years. But really more recently was just kind of the unluck of the draw with the realignment. Because back in the old days when there was 11 teams, everybody, you picked two rivals, you played them every year, and then the other teams, the other eight, you rotated on a six-year period. Well, Iowa and Illinois were scheduled to be off in 9 and 10. Then Nebraska joined the league. They were in different divisions, and then they were off, and then they were off again. And it was like, you know, 5 or 6 years there where they didn't play. And so it was kind of out of sight, out of mind, I think, for both. And, you know, as you know, Lauren, especially basketball, but also in football, you know, they used to kind of rile each other up. And now it's kind of docile, and it's really unfortunate. I mean, two border schools, two teams that really battle for recruits, and especially in the Chicagoland area, and here they are. You know, you were to ask Iowa fans right now, you know, what's Illinois mean? And I hate to say it, but it's kind of like, well, it's a little bit closer than Purdue, but it's kind of like Purdue or Indiana, and it's just kind of another opponent, and that's really unfortunate.
Yeah. You mentioned basketball. What's the basketball program look like for Iowa this year? You got everybody back, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty good. I mean, last year, as much as they, you know, they struggled at times, especially early, and then they lost twice to the Illini. They were one of the four teams, the best teams left out of the tournament. They really had a good run at the end of the season, and they return everybody but Peter Jock, you know, the Big Ten's leading scorer. But they have a lot of really good young talent. They brought in a couple of, you know, bigger guys. They have a center now, I think, that'll really help them. And I think the basketball team should be right there. And then their schedule is advantageous. You know, they play Michigan State and Wisconsin only once, and it's here in Iowa City. So I think this is a team that will be sneaky. I think it will be competitive for the top three or four in the Big Ten. And if it doesn't win 11 games in the Big Ten, I mean, won 10 last year, I think it's going to be a disappointing year. I think this is an NCAA tournament team.
You mentioned Wisconsin, and everybody does this. You know, we just expect them to be good. How can they be good this year? Come on.
Basketball-wise?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they're you know, they lost so heavily, and they've only got one real starter back, don't they?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you know, but you know, I guess maybe now that Bo Ryan's not there anymore, you look at him and go, all right, maybe this is the year they kind of fall, because every year I would say that about Wisconsin, oh, they only return one starter, and then all of a sudden they're still in the top four. And, you know, I would think that, you know, that for Iowa is also kind of a strong rivalry. And going when they go up there, now they won there last year, but they rarely win there. So I think that's you know, helpful for them. 2 years ago, they came here, and Iowa was ranked as high as third in the country and just fell apart. And, you know, and Wisconsin came here and beat Iowa, and it just really sent them down a spiral. And but Ethan Happ is still one of the best players in the league.
Scott Docterman of the Land at 10 joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS for a couple more minutes. Give him a follow on Twitter at Scott Docterman. Scott, we talked about this with Glenn Mason. You wrote a really good piece on the stability of the two programs, and it's just a major difference. In your time covering the Hawkeyes, was there a moment for you where you thought, okay, this is Kirk Ferentz is done? Because I know that you mentioned there were several years where he was down, but was there a moment for you where you thought, okay, this is it, he's done?
You know, I think about 10 years ago, there was a chance. You know, they had 2 6-6 seasons. They started off 3-3, and I mean, the natives were getting a little restless. But I never thought at that point that, okay, it's going to go down this path. They did have a lot of arrests, so that kind of clouded a lot of things too. But really about after the 2014 season was when I thought the critical mass was starting to tip the other way, that maybe a change was necessary, because they lost all four trophy games, including to a 2-10 Iowa State. They were 7-6, but they were expected to compete. It just felt like it was pretty stale. And they, you know, 5-year period, they were 34-30, and just, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of progress. And, you know, you talk to older fans, and they look at it like kind of like with Tom Davis as the basketball coach. All he did was get Iowa to the tournament. He didn't do a whole lot when he got there. And then they wanted to go to the next level. And, yeah, they went the next level down. So I think there was some, you know, trepidation about that. However, when, you know, Kirk, if the clock started ticking, he, you know, really ramped it back up by going 12-0 in regular season the next year. So I don't think there's really – it's ever really been in danger. But I think at that point it was kind of like, okay, maybe things are starting to go in that direction.
Well, Scott, we're short on time here. Give me a quick prediction for today's game.
I think Iowa wins. You know, I think Illinois still is so young and struggling. I kind of like Iowa. You know, it's a yucky day. I think it's going to be a yucky game, maybe like 24-6.
All right. Well, Scott, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
thanks, Scott.
The time.
Yep.
That is Derek Piper on the show today. Thanks to Glenn Mason as well. Well, Lauren, any final thoughts as we get ready for this game kicking off at 11 o'clock this morning?
Yeah, we need Iowa to fumble more like they have already. They've lost 8 fumbles this season, and for some reason, you know, normally you expect Iowa to be careful with the ball, but they haven't been. The other thing is you need George to throw the ball successfully without the turnovers. That's a key. I mean, even if he has some incompletions, I understand that, but don't let the ball get in the other guy's hands. If Illinois has some turnovers early, this game could swing pretty fast.
Well, thanks so much, Lauren. We'll do it again next week.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for your time, your calls, and listening this morning. Thanks to our engineer, Ed Bond, producer, Evan Kahn, back at the Radio Center. Scott Beatty come up next with Illini Game Day here on DWS.